God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer.
My administration will be focused on three very important words. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
This man must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And of course he'll have to be a genius, because he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up for safety. You are now entering another dimension with the Scott Adams Show.
And that's right. My name is Scott Adams. You're listening to The Scott Adams Show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Leonora's going to be joining us here in a little while. Wow. So, the New Hampshire primary is going on right now. They are still trying to figure out the vote in Iowa. In fact, the Iowa caucus manager, the DNC director out there in Iowa, was trying to figure out trying to give a statement as to what's the next thing. And the Iowa caucus sign fell off the podium. It was an exclamation point to a very, very disastrous Iowa caucus. No one really knows who won that race. More than likely, that was by design. And more than likely, Bernie got the shaft again. And now heading into New Hampshire, everybody indicates, you know, Bernie's probably going to win the Democrat primary there. Trump gave a great, great rally. And Jonathan Carl from ABC was just, you know, taken back by the whole thing. He said the energy was like nothing he's ever seen. And not to mention the fact that Jonathan Carl also, in another day, a couple of days ago, said that he thought that the Democrats had an enthusiasm problem. So, don't know which one it is, but here's Jonathan Carl at the Trump rally last night. Let's see if we can take a listen.
Lindsay, Trump supporters are as fired up as I have ever seen them. I mean, this rally is in an arena that I was at just two nights ago, Saturday night, at an event that included all of the major Democratic nominees, the candidates for the Democratic nomination. And we have a bigger crowd here by far just for Donald Trump than we had on Saturday for all of the Democrats. Some of these people were waiting out line starting yesterday. And trust me, Manchester, New Hampshire, it is cold, it is rainy, snow on the ground. They're waiting more than 24 hours, some of them, to come here. So, yes, Trump supporters are very energized. You've got the impeachment acquittal, good news on the economy, and Democrats coming out of Iowa seem to be in disarray. They feel like they're on the winning side. And also, by the way, Trump's approval rating has hit its highest level ever. But think about it, Lindsay, that approval rating is still, in the Gallup poll, 49%, less than half the country. So even at the high watermark, arguably, for the Trump presidency, he has a tough battle ahead, regardless of who the Democrats are.
So they had to end that with he's higher than President Obama. President Obama was at like 46, 47. So Trump is at 49, 50, 51. And with Rasmussen, Trump is hitting 53, 52. So much higher than Barack Obama at the same time. That same campaign, Carl, was also, let's see. Well, he also was talking about the enthusiasm problem that he had. So There's a lot of interesting things going on there. But, you know, the big news yesterday and the big news coming out of the weekend, really, is really about Trump's counterattack. You know, he let the National Security Council, about 70 people go. They're being pushed out of the White House. They can go back to their bases if they're part of the military. They can go back to the State Department. They can go back to the CIA, maybe. But, you know, I still have a problem with people like Eric Ciaramella handling classified information at the CIA. You know, we need a clean house. I think it's been proven pretty well that Barack Obama and the people that he hired are, you know, radical liberal socialists that somehow have lost a marble or two in their head. They're not looking at this like, you know, say two tennis players go out in the court and they know the rules of the game and they volley. And then, you know, it's your turn to serve and then it's my turn to serve. You know, and it just happens that, you know, and in volleyball, winners serve. So it's understood, right? The winner keeps serving until they lose, and then the other team serves. And that's how you score points in volleyball. But those are the rules. And so Trump won. The rules are you hand it over and let Trump run his, you know, administration. But that's not what they are allowing to have happen. And in large part, it's because there's been so much corruption and so much false entitlement. They think that they run the show. They think they're the smartest people in the room. And they've had it their way for so long. I mean, the Democrats, their whole psychology is such that they get to dictate. And dictators are socialists, but they get to dictate. The professor dictates to the children, to the students. And the editors dictate to the journalists, and the journalists dictate to the people. And so the universities and the academia and the journalists and the media and the news used to have a monopoly. And so many things are changing so fast, they don't even know what it's like to relinquish power. The same thing is true with the woman screaming, you know, up in the air, looking up in the air when when President Trump won. She was screaming as if it was the worst thing. But if you had a debate with her, she wouldn't even know the issues. And so, you know, the situation is a lot of these people that are upset about and have this Trump derangement syndrome aren't even smart enough to actually grasp the topic, the issue. So what are they so passionate about? They're passionate because they're spoiled rotten. They're spoiled rotten. They think that they're entitled. They think that their team ought to win. But they don't even know anything about the issues. A lot of these people that are supporting Bernie right now on the left don't understand the spoils and the problems of socialism.
Because they're young and they're thinking they can get free education, free cell phones, free internet, free everything. But you know what, Scott? Nothing is free. Yeah. I mean, that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. Nothing is free.
No, absolutely not.
But people who have no experience don't know that.
Well, you know, the government, they can't run a train system right. You know, Amtrak is subsidized by the government. The post office is probably the most poorly run shipping distribution system I've seen.
Yeah, and it's so funny when you go back and you look at old movies like Miracle on 34th Street, where they use the post office to substantiate the existence of Santa Claus, and they say that the post office is second to none in its efficiency. Well, let's go back to those days. I mean, when was the last time the post office was second to none in its efficiency?
Well, I think it's because they have competition now with other
yeah.
Just like the Walter Cronkites and the Peter Jennings and the Tom Brokaws and the Dan Rathers of the world, who are pretty much dictating stuff. You know, even Barbara Walters. I mean, you know, when we look back, some of the things. But that's what the whole thing is about, though. Trump is shifting things back to center, back to, you know, what America used to be. This whole Make America Great Again thing is all about, you know, everything that we know Trump is doing. You know?
It's also it's appreciating the greatness and the success that has been in our past, the glorious accomplishments that we have, and also looking at the people that are among us and who among us who will achieve those great objectives, and then everybody in their own way is going to contribute to society. And you know, and the point is to be in an environment where you can pull out everybody's gifts and align them with the appropriate tasks. And but you have to be in a playing field in which you're encouraged and in which you have a hopeful future. And that's one of the things that President Trump offers, is he offers hope to people. Because if you look at the rally, Scott, and you and I talk about this all the time, people don't look angry. They look like thrilled pieces to be there. They're, you know, they stand in line for hours. I mean, they're not there to, you know, with the exception of some of the protesters that you see, they're not there to upset things. They're there to hear something encouraging and, you know, something that validates the what they're feeling and what they're hoping.
Well, you know, in his rally in New Hampshire last night, he was, you know, he was talking about how, you know, winning is important. He also read the snake poem.
Oh, yeah. He does that so well. And, you know, that's so apropos. If you, when you listen to that poem, yes, he's using it to talk about illegal immigration, but it's also very, very much a morality tale. It's, you know, it's all about, you know, don't let somebody into your life who's going to ruin it when you knew in the very beginning that that person was a snake.
So Donald Trump tweeted yesterday, he says, a lot of he's retweeting something that the Danny Velazan from the New York Times said, and the New York Times guy says this. He says, "A lot of people feel defeated. Trump always wins. It seems like nothing can stop him." And President Trump basically said, "But isn't that what you want from your president?" You know, it used to be that, you know, you would think, okay, the most who's the most patriotic person in the United States? Well, you would like it to be your president.
One would think, but Barack Obama changed all that.
And who would be the, you know, other than your real true parents, who would be the father-like figure in your life? Because we've never had a woman president yet. So who would be the father-like figure? And of course, you would say, well, I would want that to be the president. I would want the president to be, you know, like a father figure for our country, where, you know, all of us have a leader that we can look up to. And, you know, a lot of people on the left, yeah, they can say, well, Trump doesn't represent that because of his antics or his tweets or his whatever. But, you know, when I look at Trump, I look at the boss in the room. I look at the guy that, you know, that comes off looking like a boss, looking, and when he reads those poems and when he gives you your, you know, momentum and rally, I think he looks more like a fatherly figure, a grandfatherly figure. He is someone you could look up to. He's the kind of man that you would want to have as a leader and of course, president of the United States. But, you know, yesterday was there were so many big things, and I've been talking about this for a while, and that is we've always been trying to get to our counterattack, and the counterattack was on hold because they were constantly keeping Trump's administration on the defense.
Yeah. Yes.
And so the problem was Trump was trying to let these things go out. This is why exactly, this is why that Mueller, special counsel, mm-hmm. just continued on infinitum. Because mm-hmm. Mueller, and everybody's starting to make this clear now, Leonora.
Yes.
That Mueller could have known, I think Trump just said this the other day. He said, and some other people confirmed it, but Mueller really could have known that this was there was no case here related to the Russian collusion hoax. He knew this 2 days in, three mm-hmm. days in. He knew that the dossier was bogus and that everything based on anything was that there was no chain of custody or there was a lot of foul play. There was a lot of things that would make the case for Russian hoaxes, this whole Russian collusion, you know, pretty much a hoax. And yet Mueller took over two years, spent $32 million wrecking people's lives, costing people their life's savings because of the attorney. Even Roger Stone just now, by this guy named Tom Sullivan, a bar confirmation appointee, is suggesting that Roger Stone get 9 years, even though Credigo, the witness testimony to against Roger Stone is suggesting he didn't take it seriously. You know, this whole tip in terms of, I guess it was lying. He was charged and prosecuted for lying under oath because of the information that he said he did or did not have mm-hmm. related to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. And at the end of the day, it's a huge nothing burger. How anybody could get 9 years. Rapists don't get 9 years. This guy, you're talking about a WikiLeaks news report that he leaked out and was spreading around because in a political season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't even get over the fact that he's even in court, but let alone the FBI bust down his door and could have killed somebody with their machine guns pointed in his face. And so President Trump just tweeted out this morning that this is horrible. This should never happen. Chuck Ross from the Daily Caller has been writing up a whole bunch of articles about this. And Trump's been tweeting a lot of this stuff. But I'm telling you, it's a real problem because we have two standards of justice here. You know, you get someone like Hillary Clinton, who has been involved in so many murders, whether it's Benghazi or these, you know, these corrupt decisions with Uranium One and all these other things in between, all the money that's been going into the Clinton Foundation while she was the State Department Secretary of State. It's crazy that that Roger Stone is going through this. Now, of course, I'm certain he's going to get a pardon, and you'll be watching Trump roll this out and say what an injustice it is. But you wonder what Barr's up to, and maybe what it is Barr is trying to make an example, because from what I understand, there's going to be some arrests coming down the pike.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have been talking about McCabe and Comey going down soon. There's a whole laundry list of people that will likely be arrested. I will tell you that Lindsey Graham made an interesting statement that we're going to try to play for you as well. And that statement was basically that, let's see if I could find it right here. Let's see if this is it.
We're going to have to take a quick break. I do want to...
No, that one wasn't it. I got a bunch of clips here, and that was the wrong clip. Let's see if this is the right one.
Half the people behind the Russian investigation, what happened? Half the people behind the Russian investigation are going to go to jail, and Trump was cleared.
Hopefully.
Well, just hang tight. The Russian investigation.
So that's a pretty powerful statement. Now, Lindsey Graham's been making a bunch of statements lately, and we're going to talk about, I think yesterday, some things that Barr did, and we're going to put it all together, and then we have a couple of different reports to talk about the Ukrainian investigation. But he said that, and that was powerful. That's Lindsey Graham. But then Lindsey Graham also said something to the effect that the Russians hacked our servers, and we should never let that happen again. And I said, so long as anybody is saying that Russia hacked our servers, I have to say, then they're part of the hoax.
Yeah.
Because you cannot make that claim if you're a lawyer or if you're a judge. You cannot make that claim if you know about chain of custody you know, the integrity of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Because CrowdStrike, who is, you know, owned by a Ukrainian person or Russian-born person, Dmitry Alperovich, that situation was that it was the president of CrowdStrike was Sean Henry. Sean Henry was paid by Mark Elias. Mark Elias says, I work every day at trying to get Democrats elected. Who's Mark Elias? Mark Elias is the attorney for Perkins Coie, the Democrat liberal smear merchant law firm in D.C. that actually tried to tear apart Jim Jordan's life in the scandal with the Ohio State thing. Same law firm that was involved in Fusion GPS and the dossier, and it was the same law firm that was colluding with CrowdStrike. They were paid for They were paid by DNC and Hillary Clinton. And they used these subcontractors, the worst of the worst. And not to mention the fact that you're going to find out that Andy Weissman, the chief attorney for the Mueller report, was the person that secured the $10,000 that went to George Papadopoulos. Mm-hmm. So this was a coup from the very beginning, right? And Ukrainian was just coup part two, right? So there was the Russian coup, mm-hmm. then there was the Ukrainian coup, but it was all about coups. And so long as you have this investigation going against the president, you can't have the president fight back or they're going to say you're obstructing. So, you know, when Trump fired Comey, it was obstruction. If he fired Mueller, it would have been impeachment for sure. And Lindsey Graham was, you know, preventing Trump from doing any of any mm-hmm. fighting back. I recall that. The other part is during this whole time, 4 days before Trump was to meet with Putin in Helsinki, you had the situation where you had these 12 Russian officials get indicted. Rod Rosenstein with sweat all over his face, nervous as can be. This was in July of 2018. July 16th, 2018 was the Helsinki meeting with Putin. First Putin meeting. Soccer ball with a chip in it. Ball's in your court, sir. They brought up Bill Browder. They brought up the Magnitsky Act. They brought up a lot of things in that. That was a high-stakes meeting. We lost a Secret Service person who died mysteriously. A 40-something-year-old super fit guy dies in Scotland a day or two before the meeting. The issue is you wonder who got to him and whether they're trying to wage another false flag, like poisoning the London spies and blaming it on Russia, then we sanction Russia. Like, you know, the Ukrainian Holocaust, where you had mercenaries in 2014 sniper firing and shooting and killing over 100 people and blaming it on Russia. And again, a lot of people might think, well, maybe it wasn't Russia. Maybe it was something else. Maybe it was American spooks that were doing it as part of the radical left to secure the corruption that was going on in Ukraine. And so you have that situation where there is no chain of custody. So how in the world those 12 Russian indictments, how in the world could you issue those indictments if there was no chain of custody that CrowdStrike confiscated the DNC server? So CrowdStrike confiscates the DNC server, never relinquishes it. They didn't even write up a report. And there were people that were saying, well, we never saw a report. We never read the report. The FBI drew conclusions without even reading a report from CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike never even issued a full report. They never let the FBI see the server. And I remember Comey on under oath saying, we just trusted CrowdStrike, who is run by Sean Henry, the president, founded by a Russian guy, and they are also known to have been hackers in election machines for committing election fraud. But CrowdStrike, in addition to that, was run by this guy, Sean Henry, who was pictured with Eric Holder and Barack Obama. And he was a senior executive within the FBI for cybersecurity. And he was working on a whole bunch of things, including the Sony case, when Sony apparently got hacked by Korea. But then again, they're saying that was a false flag attempt. So you got a Democrat spook, Sean Henry, working with Mark Elias, a uber liberal, and you got John Podesta. And immediately after the election and the inauguration in March of 2017. You have Sean Henry, John Podesta, the chairman of the DNC and Hillary's campaign manager, and Mark Elias all talking about the spin of the Russian hack and where we go next. This was all part of it. Now, I remember Richard Burr, the Senate Intel Republican, and Mark Warner were on the same page with how they believed it was all Russian hacking, and certainly you got to believe all 17 agencies and blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you, If you don't believe, if you bite on that, then you basically bite on the narrative that says Comey may have made mistakes, which is the argument that they're going to go with, and so is McCabe, and so are, is Brennan, and so are all these other people. You're giving them this cover, and Lindsey Graham's going to come out selling this and giving these people cover. So Lindsey Graham speaks out of both sides of his mouth when he talks tough on one day, but then says, well, we can't rule out that they just didn't make mistakes. They are patriots. You know, Biden's a friend of mine, whatever. You know, he's always friends with those liberals, right? He went to bat for Menendez in court. He sided with Pelosi on the pullout and withdrawal of in Syria. And he is a good friend of the Bidens. And so, you know, you can't trust Lindsey because he keeps saying these things, but nothing's happening. Now, Richard Burr's supposed to pick up something, but Richard Burr already made up his mind that Russian hacking is gospel. The fact is that there is still this thing called Seth Rich. Seth Rich is still dead. Nobody knows who killed him. And everybody sort of understands that what Julian Assange said, that Seth Rich was a source that got killed in the street. That is what we know. Now we're finding out that there are new FBI documents. There's text going on between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok where they're talking about FBI documents that were disclosed because of Judicial Watch's FOIA requests and Tom Fenton. And these documents indicate that not only did the FBI lie, they lied about the Seth Rich. They said they weren't involved in the investigation, I should say cover up. Just like in Las Vegas, that was a cover up, right? And they every time the FBI gets involved in something, it seems like there's politics and cover up. And they yet when you ask them the question, they'll tell you they're the exact opposite of that. Whatever they say they are not, they are. And in this case, they're full of politics. So they had this whole document set that said Seth Rich. Yet they went on record saying, we don't have any documents related to Seth Rich. That's not a case we're even on. But yet Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were talking about the FBI documents that were under the Seth Rich category, that the FBI was involved, and that the FOIA disclosures indicated that there were FBI documents. And then the documents were redacted. And supposedly, they were redacted to protect the investigation, but it turns out it was redacted for the cover-up. And I've been saying they've been pulling this stunt for a long time. They classify documents and redact documents to cover up their crimes. Just like, you know, I said about Eric Ciaramella being sort of like a redacted classified person. So that's why they're trying to get away with, you can't know who this person is because this person's an agent of the CIA involved in clandestine operations. We're not allowed to know who they are because if we did, then his life would be in danger. So, but we are going to use him as a whistleblower. And I say you cannot have a classified ID or person serve also as a whistleblower. They have to give up one or the other. You can't be both. You can't be anonymous and restricted and yet be a whistleblower at the same time.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, because by definition, a whistleblower is somebody who is shedding sunshine on a situation. And if they're hiding in the shadows, then that doesn't make the case for their honesty and their integrity.
That's right. So Greg Rubini had a really interesting thread. He said, Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday on Jeanine Pirro said, half the people behind the Russia investigation are going to jail. And there was a thread. Well, just hang tight. And he said, she said, so who will go to jail? And basically, he was kind of vague. But the list that Greg put together says FBI and DOJ, James Comey, Andy McCabe, Peter Strzok, Joe Pienka. Yeah, Joe Pienka, we haven't talked a lot about him. Kevin Kleinsmith, the attorney that changed some of the language and doctored the 302s. Loretta Lynch is the AG. You know, she met with Bill Clinton on the tarmac, right? Sally Yates, real piece of work. Remember in the beginning when Trump was doing the travel ban and Sally Yates was insubordinate? Yep. She got herself fired. Bruce Orr. Then there's a guy named David Loftman. I don't know. But Bruce Orr is married to Nellie Orr, worked with Fusion GPS, developed a third or second channel. McCain was one channel. There's another channel for the dossier to make its way over to the FBI to commit FOIA request fraud and a fraud on the court, on the FISA court. FISA. But then Greg Rubini says, but Senator Lindsey Graham's words imply that also others will go to jail. John Brennan, we just heard that Lindsey Graham clip, by the way, on Maria. John Brennan, James Clapper. Brennan because he is the mastermind of the spy ops on Trump. Clapper because he's an idiot. He's a liar. Clapper told David Ignatius, take the kill shot on Flynn. And again, Flynn and the Carter Page, and, well, Flynn was going to be NSA. So Flynn was going to be in charge of a lot of the Security Council work. And Security Council was a sieve, you know, it was leaking like a sieve. There's a lot of people that were involved in the Trump White House in the beginning that were just completely, and that's why I say, if you're a Democrat at this point, I'm not voting for you. I don't care who you are. You're on the wrong party. And if you're an Obama holdover, if you ever worked in the Obama White House, you're exempt from working in my administration at this point. You know, I mean, there's just no way you could trust them. You got, you know, shame on you, bad on you. You know, I hate to stereotype in general and generalize, but at some point, if you say on your resume you worked for the Obama administration, you might as well just say you worked for the devil. You work for a hate America group, because that's what the Obama administration was all about. Anti-America, changing, fundamentally transforming America into something it never, ever was intended to be. And that's what they did.
And so much for the hope and change.
So today there is great article from the Gateway Pundit. Okay, so it says, breaking, word on the street is there may be major arrests. Okay, so the major arrests they're talking about are Peter Strzok and Andy McCabe. And the article goes like this. Word on the street is there may be major deep state arrests this week. But of course, we've heard this before. The word on the street is from qualified sources is that former deep state crooked cops are going to be arrested this week. And Lindsey Graham says half of the deep state will go be going to prison. Now, that being said, there's more. There's a lot more. Because one of the things that has come out that I think is very, very interesting is what's been written up about related to Imran Awan and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. That's not been put to sleep yet. But then Pompeo came out with some remarks. And his remarks were very, very interesting. Then you had the remarks of, and we're going to play those remarks too, but Bill Barr also. Now, Bill Barr comes out and he says that anything that you learn about Ukraine, you really have to be skeptical. You can't trust any information coming to, being delivered or disseminated to the DOJ. You cannot trust anything. Anything that's given to you. Does that include Giuliani? He was asked. And he says, are you working with... So Giuliani basically is doing his own independent investigation on behalf of the president, his client, because his client was under siege by the deep state government, who was trying to prosecute him or execute him for having ties to people he didn't have ties with. So he's saying, I didn't have ties with Ukraine or Russia. But I suspect that other people did, from what I hear, from what Biden said or whatever was else said. So let's look into it. So doing his due diligence for his client, Giuliani goes over and gets all kinds of information. We're going to play a clip from Giuliani here in a second as well. We're going to try to make sure we have enough time. And we're going commercial free today because I knew this was going to be just an amazing amount of data that I'm going to throw at you. So you got a couple of things going on all at the same time. You got Barr saying he's skeptical about anything that comes out of Ukraine. What you need is you need ironclad, good information. Then you got some things that Pompeo said. And what Barr was saying is basically, trust me, DOJ will vet anything coming to us. What he's in essence saying, translation, is we know that the left doesn't believe a word Giuliani says, that Giuliani comes at things from a biased perspective. So what he's in essence saying to the world is, we're working with Giuliani as we work with anybody. When Giuliani submits information to us, we are going to receive it, and we are going to vet it. And once we vet it, it will be DOJ by product, meaning it will no longer be Giuliani product. It will be DOJ product. And that's the good news. That's the good part. And then there's the Pompeo part, where Pompeo also is now on the counterattack. And he's talking to a set of governors. And let's listen to what he says to these governors about China and about fraud. Let's listen.
Last year, I received an invitation to an event that promised to be, quote, an occasion for exclusive deal making. It said, quote, the opportunities for mutually beneficial economic development between China and our individual states are tremendous, end of quote. Deal making sounds like it might have come from President Trump, but the invitation was actually from a former governor. I was being invited to the U.S.-China Governors Collaboration Summit. It was an event co-hosted by the National Governors Association and something called the Chinese People's Association for Friendship and Foreign Countries. Sounds pretty harmless. What the invitation did not say is that the group I just mentioned, is the public face of the Chinese Communist Party's official foreign influence agency, the United Front Work Department. Now, I was lucky. I was familiar with that organization from my time as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. But it got me thinking, how many of you made the link between that group and Chinese Communist Party officials? What if you made a new friend while you were at that event? What if your new friend asked you for introductions to other politically connected and powerful people? What if your new friend offered to invest big money in your state, perhaps in your pension, in industries sensitive to our national security? These aren't hypotheticals. These scenarios are all too true, and they impact American foreign policy significantly. Indeed, last year, a Chinese government-backed think tank in Beijing produced a report that assessed all 50 of America's governors on their attitudes towards China. They labeled each of you friendly, hardline, or ambiguous. I'll let you decide where you think you belong. Someone in China already has. Many of you indeed in that report are referenced by name. So here's the lesson. The lesson is that competition with China is not just a federal issue. It's why I wanted to be here today, Governor.
So, wow. Yeah, that's pretty powerful, right?
It's very powerful.
Yeah, that's a situation where... Oh, now here's Jonathan Carl talking about the enthusiasm problem. Okay, I couldn't find this one earlier.
Tonight, the Democratic candidates, they were all just down the road here, had an event at the very same arena where Donald Trump will be on Monday, where he was 4 years ago, and there were empty seats there. There was energy certainly in the Elizabeth Warren section, mm-hmm. energy with the Bernie Sanders section, but not, I mean, this does not look like an energized party.
Let me take
party.
That to you because I think...
He's talking about the Democrats there. So I just ran across that. I thought I would play it. But I want to play this this other clip related to Devin Nunes, because again, all of these things are coming out now. Why? Because we've been on a blockade for the longest time. I mean, Trump administration is now swinging back. Once again, they were waiting for the Mueller report to close up. Could have closed up in 2 days. Took 2.5 years. They stalled it right through the 2018 election. With the help of Bloomberg spending hundreds of millions of dollars to try to win those seats. They were successful, They needed the House to do exactly what they did. This was all part of their strategy that paid off and worked. And this was a problem for Trump. Because without the House doing these senseless committee hearings and things like that, impeachment, we wouldn't have been through all this hell. But they got what they wanted. This was all part of the strategy that the Democrats are trying to steal the election and prevent Trump from actually getting to the bottom of Ukraine. That's what this is all about. And the whole Russian hoax, the whole Russian collusion, the FISA warrants, everything is coming out now. And I think what Trump has said was enough of this pussyfooting around. We are going to fire every single NSC member that was a holdover from the Obama administration. We can no longer trust anything associated with Obama. These are enemies of the country, and we're gonna fight fire with fire now. And he's coming back swinging. And this stuff has to happen quickly now, because what you're seeing is it coming from all fronts. And what you saw there was Pompeo. Pompeo was pretty bold there in that statement. But then let's listen to, you know, that we know that they fired Vindman, right? And then they fired Sondland. You know, they're cleaning house. I mean, but this is what we need to have done, is get rid of all these people. I'm telling you, the business wing, a lot of the business people that serve as diplomats are doing such a fine job elsewhere. It's these career diplomats from the State Department that think that they're, you know, they're the smartest people in the room, the pseudo-intellectuals, the academics. They think that they're 10 times smarter than Donald Trump. And they don't realize that they're subordinates and that they need to carry out that mission. So let's just listen to what Devin Nunes had to say.
Apparently, the NSC advisor, Robert O'Brien, is set to overhaul the NSC staff as early as next week. Ambassador Vindman is out, and people are saying, hey, this is just payback for them telling the truth. What do you say about that?
Well, it's a long time in coming. So I've been on Fox several times saying that the National Security Council, number one, needs to be downsized. They don't need hundreds of people. Number two, anyone that was there during the Obama administration should be immediately removed from the White House and put somewhere else. I don't care where they go, but just removed from the White House. Because, look, we know that it's highly likely that many of the leaks that started at the very beginning of President Trump's administration came from the National Security Council. And that should be very concerning. And I've been saying this for a long time. And it's sad that it's taken a new National Security Advisor, O'Brien, to actually come in and start to clean this up. So I would just say, don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Yeah. Always a great expression.
Yeah. Now let's listen to thing about Giuliani, what Giuliani has to say. Now, this one's really important because Giuliani is working with Barr. Giuliani has a set of documents that he only got because of a lawsuit, a securities and exchange violation from Devin Archer, Hunter Biden's partner, who got taken to court and I think got prosecuted. In any case, these documents had to be disclosed. And I want to hear this. I want you to hear this exchange by Giuliani.
Remember they said that Hunter Biden was not under investigation by that prosecutor?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like you to look at this document that he unequivocally says, and this is around the time he was fired. This is February 18, 2016. He was fired February 2016.
They're talking about Victor Shokin, the prosecutor who was fired. So what happened was in December 2015 was when Joe Biden went over there and met up with Poroshenko and tried to go and get the prosecutor fired. He says, you got 6 hours to pull the trigger and make this thing happen. So, son of a bee, you know, he made it happen, right? So that was that part. And then what happened next is it took a couple of months for that whole process to go through because there was some parliamentary procedures they needed to do. But they said, yes, we are committed to doing that. And they did it. They succeeded at doing it. 3 months later, no, 2 months later. 2 months later, the guy was fired. So they're talking about Victor Shokin. And people were saying Victor Shokin wasn't even investigating Hunter Biden. So what was the motivating factor for Joe Biden to do the firing? Right. Well, now we know because of Devin Archer had to release documents because of his own court case with security and exchange violations. that Giuliani has the document, which he now has submitted to the DOJ. And the DOJ and the FBI was asked about whether they're investigating Hunter Biden. They didn't say no. They said we don't talk about ongoing investigations. So the answer was almost yeah.
16.
Okay.
It just reads very simply, Burisma Holding Limited and its director, Hunter Biden, are involved in corruption affair. And then it lays out a stone-cold money laundering situation that he was involved in for $14.6 million that went from, as disguised as loans, from Ukraine to Latvia, Latvia to Cyprus, and then it came to the U.S., and they wouldn't give the prosecutor the amounts of money that went to Hunter Biden and Devin Archer because the prosecutor was told the American embassy wouldn't give it. Well, I recovered those documents from the trial of Devin Archer. You know, his partner was convicted of,
insider
of securities fraud.
Convicted. Yeah.
In that trial, they had to produce records that shows this money coming in at exactly that time. So it ties the money laundering all together. If there were a document about you or me like this, I think we'd be in jail by now.
The Treasury Department...
He hasn't even been investigated.
Well, this is the thing. Every time you bring this up, the critics of the president say, well, this has been looked at and looked at before.
Nobody
this
ever
actually
looked,
has not look, been looked
nobody
at.
Nobody ever looked
and
at
And the Treasury has
I
now...
I recovered this. Nobody looked at this. They have...
So, you know, that's very powerful stuff. And, you know, there's just so much going on here, too. I can play clip after clip of a lot of these things. There's also something that Glenn Beck put together with money laundering. There's this big story related to this from the IMF, and it goes up to the tune of $40 billion. And what it amounts to is that this money was being laundered and coming back to politicians in America.
Yeah.
So what we're gonna eventually learn is that the IMF was securing some loans. It was being laundered back through the American political sphere, Politico, you know, D.C., and then out back through the USAID. There was USAID that was gone missing. You know, we're talking billions of dollars. And the IMF, who was the Christina...
Lagarde, I think.
Lagarde, yeah. And she is as corrupt as the day is long. And then there's the other part where, again, with the FBI, we're starting to hear more and more about Seth Rich. So there's so many things that are coming down the pike. What is Julian Assange going to say? When is he going to get to speak? When does he get to speak? What is he going to say? And so you got Julian Assange. You got all these different things happening at the same time, and it's got to happen. You know, Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, John Solomon. I want to play this clip right here from John Solomon. Let's just take a listen.
I can confirm to you tonight that the U.S. government had open source intelligence and was aware as early as February of 2019 that the Ukrainian government was planning to reopen the Burisma investigation. This is long before the president ever imagined having a call with President Zelensky. In fact, it's before President Zelensky was even elected. This is a significant shift in the factual timeline. This is information that was omitted from the whistleblower's complaint. Let me tell you that what we learned today. The U.S. government was aware through open source intelligence in February that NABU, an FBI-like agency in Ukraine that fights corruption, in fact, it was started by Joe Biden, that it requested a reopening of the investigation into Burisma, its owner Zolchevsky, and unusual transactions in the Burisma accounts in February of 2019. On March 28, 2019, the general prosecutor's office agreed to that request to open an investigation, and they filed a 15-page notice of suspicion alleging that there may be illicit funds that were running through Burisma from 2010 all the way through 2015. That's important because Hunter Biden's on the board for two of those years, 2014, 2015. And specifically, that notice of suspicion said they were looking at the possibility that the $3.4 million paid to Hunter Biden's firm may have been part of the illicit funds that were moving through the company. A month later, in April, the prosecutor's office, open source intelligence, again, U.S. government officials confirming they were aware of this made a request of another investigative agency in Ukraine for assistance in going through these bank records. That is a significant change in the timeline. It was omitted from the whistleblower's complaint. And the question is, did he not know it, or did he exclude it because it didn't fit the narrative he was?
See, so, I mean, all of this stuff is really coming out. And it's interesting. Now, Trump has been tweeting up a lot of this stuff, too. And he, one of our favorite writers is Paul Sperry. And he's done a lot of good work. Well, Trump retweeted like 10 Paul Sperrys. And it's kind of interesting because there is, again, this FISA abuse. So we have Durham Barr. We have Ghislaine Maxwell's computer getting hacked, right?
Yeah.
We got John Solomon releasing his documents because there was a recent theft with his laptop, which is interesting in and of itself. You got Julian Assange sitting in a jail cell in London. He's directly connected with Seth Rich because he's on Dutch television suggesting that Seth Rich was his source. Now we're learning more about the FOIA request Tom Fitton had and the new information that the FBI lied about this. You got this Roger Stone situation off on the side as well. President Trump more than likely is poised and ready to pardon Roger Stone. I hope he does. What a victim there. And then you got all this Flynn stuff. A lot of this stuff that's in the courts too is helping reveal a lot of this information. Now, a lot can be said about the DOJ not cooperating. And I think it's because a lot of the data points that they have that they don't want to release are related to other investigations and cooperations that they have, I think even with Loretta Lynch, who I'm sure they've spoken with. And now they didn't speak, Durham did not speak with Carter Page, but I think Carter Page is fully vetted and understood. But the idea there is that you still have all these other things going on with Stefan Halper and a bunch of other people. Wow.
So much to say, so little time.
I could use 5 hours today. Yeah. Well, you're listening to The Scott Adams Show. We're out of time. My name's Scott Adams.
My name is Leonora Corbetta.
And we'll see you next time on the radio. Bye-bye now.
But close enough now to see this mess.